Hello.
Hello.
That was more chipper than I expected.
It was more Dale than I expected.
I didn't even mean to do that.
It's just the setup, and then I just pushed it over. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good work right there.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Setting unrealistic expectations right out of the gate.
I don't. What are the realistic expectations for Chip 'n Dale Rescue Rangers live act, quote unquote, live action movie?
I don't know. But I, you know, I'm tired and I'm not very professional. So there was like 5 minutes of the movie that I fell asleep during. So that's the level of professionalism that I want to establish, going into this episode. So everyone is aware that I am a bad podcast co-host. So there's not going to be that same level of engagement and puns all the way through.
Yeah.
I did reread the Wikipedia summary, so I know what I missed.
Okay.
It's not surprising either. This movie doesn't have a lot of tricks and turns to it. I mean,
No,
it all sort of lives and dies by the Mulaney-ness and the Sandberg-ness.
yeah, this movie is basically just the punch up of bad of kind of a pretty mediocre script. So
I mean,
you're
it's an animated 21 Jump Street starring John Mulaney and Andy Samberg, basically.
yeah, but you're like, I don't know, there are jokes that are crafted specifically targeting animation and also people our age who grew up watching animated things around that time period. So they're not like
You mean like the references or like visual gags specifically?
the references, but also gags. So there are, because a lot of the gags are references because they contain a character from some other thing that's been recycled, and it becomes funny because of the other thing about it. That is also going on. For example, spoiler alert for anybody who has not watched the film, a character who plays more prominence than one might expect is Ugly Sonic, and his human teeth, which is a very strange choice. And they don't just like do it just for like that one throwaway like little scene. They revisit
Yeah.
the well. They
There are
revisit the Ugly
several
Sonic
people who
well.
can't have a conversation with Sonic because they can't stop staring at his teeth.
Yeah. It was well done. But yeah.
Don't think that's recent enough in the pantheon of movies for kids to remember that the internet bullied the Sonic creators into making a better Sonic?
Well, that's what I was getting at when I said animation jokes and also animation jokes for people our age, because that would fall into the animation joke category, along with Uncanny Valley being the valley. And specifically jokes about Polar Express and Beowulf, motion capture jokes. It's like, who in the general audience is really like, I need to be entertained with motion capture jokes?
Was Seth Rogen supposed to be a Beowulf character?
Well, they don't, he's not something specific, because there are two kinds of things in this movie. There are the characters who are supposed to be the characters, and then there's also sort of facsimiles that are supposed to be along the lines of those things, like Keegan-Michael Key's Bjornsson, the cheesemonger guy, who's supposed to be like Swedish chef, but a drug dealer of cheese. But
I
he has
loved his opium den of cheese. It was pretty good.
it was pretty good. And then you had like Seth Rogen, who is supposed to be basically a Beowulf. He's making fun of Beowulf, the movie that I worked on. Not to try to obfuscate or hide that fact, I didn't do the motion capture for the movie.
Did you make the dead eyes?
No, I don't. As much as I would like to take credit for the dead eyes in the movie, it was not specifically my fault. I had to breathe life into the lifeless corpse of a a woman that was in the role. I forget what her name is. She was an actress who just isn't in anything anymore. Allison, let's see, Beowulf movie. Allison, I want to say Lohman, but that doesn't. Oh yeah, Allison Lohman. I remember correctly. She turned out there was a lot of stuff that I had to do to try to fight problems we were having. She just didn't look right. She never like seemed like anyone would want to be around her, let alone be romantically involved with her. It fell upon me to try to like fix that in these scenes that are supposed to be a back and forth between Beowulf and her character. And it turned out that not to like spoil any secrets at this point, I don't think anybody cares, but the subsurface scattering maps were inverted on her the whole time. So she
was in Drag Me to Hell. I've seen that.
Yeah. So her
and Big Fish,
her like the fleshy parts that were supposed to be lively were dead, and the parts that were supposed to be more dense, where like bone would be towards the surface, were more glowy than they ought to be. So she seemed, anyway, she was a little odd, and so it just took a lot of work to try to make that stuff work. Because
I'm trying to see if any of her IMDb photos include Beowulf photos.
I don't think I'm not even sure.
I guess I could just look her character name up.
I don't think I have anything from Beowulf in my demo reel anymore. But I mean, it was like the style at the time. we had to deal with Bob Zemeckis.
She looks like a video game version of Fiona from Shrek.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But done really serious and on purpose. For some reason.
She's extremely Fiona in some of these images.
Yeah. But see, that's the thing, is just like, that's why the Seth Rogen joke in here at the expense of Beowulf is entertaining. But at the same time, it's like, who wanted the joke, like in the general public, like who's making these animation jokes? I found it entertaining.
The not looking and like standing on the shoulders to try and like get in the eye line was pretty funny.
Yeah. And the, polar bear is supposed to be the polar bear from the Coke commercials, but they didn't have licensing from Coke, which is also why they say, you owe me a license or well-known publicly available beverage or something, like some way to get around the fact that they couldn't use the word Coke.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So there are these other things, and like they have Pumbaa in here because at one point Seth Rogen falls. Seth Rogen's character of Bob, the Beowulf like character, he falls, and Pumbaa shows up to make fun of his dead eyes, and that is voiced by Seth Rogen, and it is supposed to be his version of Pumbaa from the Lion King movie. And then there's the mantis from the Kung Fu Panda movies, which is also voiced by Seth Rogen, and then the sort of like gelatinous creature that was in Monsters vs. Aliens, which was also voiced by Seth Rogen. So they just kind of like tried to like have another level of in-jokes about the voice actor himself. Which is not a joke in the world of the movie. It is a joke for the audience. So it is just a lot of stuff going on here where it's like, these are writer room jokes that are directed at sort of like this meta thing about animation and about, you know, people our age, basically. And not to get too fine a point on it, but also I would say pretty gendered, in that the whole thing is kind of like dude bro, like buddy cop kind of stuff, energy thing flowing through here. And there are only two female roles in the entire runtime of the picture, and that's Ellie and Gadget, who is voiced by Tress MacNeille, who voiced her originally, but she's barely in the movie and doesn't really say or do much of anything. But that's one of those things where it's just like, it, they're there sort of, and they don't have the jokes or the punchlines or really any of that kind of stuff to do. It's all about John Mulaney and Andy Samberg, basically. And then the backdrop of gags that are around them in terms of what animated character is going to show up and walk on screen or be there, or what kind of visual gag you'll do with Uncanny Valley stuff, or what kind of thing you'll do with like cars that are cars, like from the movie Cars, because they have the eyes for windshields and mm-hmm. stuff. Yeah.
There was one that jumped over the bumper that fell off of his old SL.
Yeah. And curiously, there was one that was a police car outside of Monterey Jack's apartment, which had a lot of scale issues because that apartment was supposed to be scaled for the Chipmunks and for Monterey Jack and for Putty. But, oh, and that's another example of a non-licensed thing, is he's supposed to be Gumby-like without being Gumby. But
yeah,
we had one of those like police car things that's there in front of it, but it is, you know, it's got the car's windshield, but it's supposed to be to the scale of that building. So then that sort of like posits a world where there is a version of the Cars movie that is scaled for Chipmunks, I guess. Like, when, why would you have that? And like when Dale is going through all of his memorabilia, he has like a little molded plastic figurine that is the size for him to hold and manipulate. And then there's also a Monterey Jack stuffed animal thing that's about the size for him to hold and manipulate, that is not anything a human child would do or have in their hands, because they would be choking hazard. So it's just one of those weird things where it's just like, to make the jokes work, sometimes they have stuff that's big be small, or small be big, et cetera.
Yeah, it's, so it's the like mixed reality world of Roger Rabbit, where people in cartoons coexist.
Yeah. Yeah. And Roger Rabbit's in the film. As
dancing, of course.
The Roger Rabbit. I found out from the Wikipedia page that they actually brought back, I don't know if they brought back, they hired one of the original animators who worked on Who Framed Roger Rabbit to animate Roger Rabbit in that scene. He's just there for that moment, and he's got the original voice actor for it. And it's a good joke. But the movie is very much influenced by Roger Rabbit to a greater degree than just that joke. And I don't know if you noticed, but in the end, when Sweet Pete is going through like the like utensils to harm Chip, he's got his hand passes over like scalpels and all this stuff, and the eraser is right next to a bottle of dip, which is the stuff that the judge used in the Roger Rabbit movie,
the toxic waste stuff.
Yeah, and the movie also borrows from Roger Rabbit in terms of the sort of like template of the villain final act super weird fight thing being strange, because that happens here too.
you were thinking it was going to be a normal ending battle sequence in this movie?
No, it's just that if you were to think about this thing being like a real world thing, like, oh, this person was surgically altered by a ray into being this sort of monstrous mutant that is all of these combinations of other cartoons, that'd be a little weird. Also, the fight between Ellie and Putty is kind of like horror-esque at one point, and then it turns into Terminator 2 in a very overt way. Like even the score, I believe, is referencing the dun dun dun, you know, kind of thing going on there. So the movie is it has sort of like a framework of jokes and also structure and references and stuff that all references other things that reference other things. Like
it's a four quadrant reference movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's just got everything in it. But now that we've talked about how much stuff,
has nothing to do with anything, but, the voice of Roger Rabbit guy, Charles Fleischer, I didn't realize he was also the creepy guy from Zodiac that tried to lure Gyllenhaal into his basement. Do you remember that scene?
I remember the scene, but I didn't realize it was the same guy.
Yeah, he's also apparently in Back to the Future 2 as a character named Terry, but that doesn't mean anything to me.
No, not ringing a bell.
He's terrifying looking.
Yeah, I've seen him like in real life.
Sorry, Charles Fleischer. Also, why is there a Who Framed Roger Rabbit 2 in pre-production in 2022? I don't like that. What is that?
I don't know. This is the first time hearing about it.
Mm.
But I guess this is a good point to bring up one of the differences between Who Framed Roger Rabbit in this, and that is animation.
I'm sorry. One more thing. Yeah. I was about to scroll away, and I saw on the Roger Rabbit 2 website, the one item of trivia highlighted on the main page says, Bob Hoskins will not reprise his role in the sequel due to his death in 2014. Thanks, trivia. Always hope that a sequel would be made. Thanks. Appreciate that for trivia.
Oh my god.
Anyway.
Why does that exist? Is this thing you write down?
That just reminds me of the line from Die Hard, Mr. Takagi will not be joining us for the rest of his life, which I can then segue back into the movie, because when the FBI is trying to arrest whatever we're naming the giant Sweet Pete robot thing, they do a Die Hard thing there at the end with the Carl knocking the blanket off and pulling up the gun and getting, well, he didn't get shot by Al Powell, but that was definitely a Die Hard riff there.
Yeah. I mean, the movie is just reference on top of reference in every direction, dimension, layer, everything is just encased, entombed in references. And it really, I guess, depends on how open you are for that sort of thing. Because some people might find it, some people don't respond well to references like nonstop every 5 seconds like this, because then it makes it, it takes you out of the movie you're watching and makes it about like the meta commentary on that kind of movie, the other thing they're talking about, etc.
I don't know that for me, this movie felt deep enough that there was meta commentary about the references that I bothered paying attention to.
No, I mean, this movie's not deep. You could tell from the casting of John Mulaney and Andy Samberg that this is not going to be deep. It's directed by Akiva Schaffer, which, again, not deep.
I don't think there was anything in there about like the dangers of addiction, Monterey Jack's cheese addiction, and kidnapping as a result. Like we weren't meant to really, internalize any sort of discussion of addiction out of that.
No, I mean, there's nothing here that's supposed to be like even the stuff that's supposed to be heartfelt, like, oh, deep down we're really buddies after all. It's like, it was taking away that lesson from the movie. He watches this and it's just like, yeah, that's what I needed.
If anything, the meta commentary is the same meta commentary that's in every movie that involves Hollywood. It's that, you know, showbiz chews people up and spits them out and ruins relationships and all that stuff. But, you know, the friends we made along the way, etc.
Yeah.
It's a tale as old as time, you know. ambitions for Hollywood, success, personality differences tearing them apart, and then a mouse marrying a fly.
Yeah, not just marrying. Babies.
Procreating with?
Yeah. So many babies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sad they didn't go through all the different combinations. Like, oh, this one looks like a fly, but with her arms or whatever. This one looks like her, but with fly eyes or whatever. Like, they could have kept going with that joke for a while.
Yeah.
Not that it would have been funny, per se, but, you know.
Right.
I'm surprised they didn't do more than two, is what I'm saying.
Yes.
Although the scene where Dale goes to Gadget's when he's figuring out the clue that Ellie gave on the phone is the one that I slept through. So maybe there was some more fly babies in there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was you were conscious for the photo of the fly babies where.
Yes. Yes. It was right around where when she said like when she was being forced to call him and say like, by the way, episode 132 or whatever was my favorite. And then he's like, why did she say 132? And he was watching it. And then the next thing I know, it was the chase stuff. So, I blacked out.
I just can't believe you're not committed to this podcast.
I apologize. Very tired.
Yeah.
That's my commitment to the podcast, is always being tired, because that's my bit.
I don't know if I mentioned this when we discussed Hot Rod, but Akiva Schaffer is the brother of Jason's friend and former coworker's husband. So I was in proximity to Akiva Schaffer at one point by virtue of being at the wedding.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you ever see him again, you'll have to tell him that you enjoyed his work on Rescue Rangers.
I don't know if I have to tell him that, but I don't know. Let's discuss, I guess, what are your overall feelings about the movie? Having said what we've said about references and, you know, meta jokes and things, like what is it you put into your Letterboxd?
Well, nothing yet because I finished it very shortly before the podcast here, but I don't know. I think what I said earlier is that this movie is kind of an animated 21 Jump Street with Mulaney and Sandberg. Is kind of how I feel about it. Like there's no need to like watch it from start to finish. Like you're not going to be sad if you like missed a plot point or whatever. Like if this came on TV and you watched 20 minutes of it, you might find it enjoyable. It's just entertaining and it's full of references and silliness. But you know, it's like you said, there's nothing particularly deep here, but it's fun. Like, I don't know. I had some fun watching it. I enjoyed references because I am of the age of the Rescue Rangers and the, you know, the various characters in the thing and such.
I think it's not that you're of the age of the Rescue Rangers, it's that you're of the age of the people who watched the Rescue Rangers.
That's what I meant. You don't need to clarify that.
I just felt like I should clarify. Yeah.
When was the original Rescue Rangers? It was, in the show they said what, like 82 or something, or is that when they first met?
That's when they first met in high school, apparently.
Right.
I
said 91 was their most popular year or something.
Yes. And so it was the early 90s. And because of the way that I think the Disney stuff worked at the time, they would like have stuff running in syndication for a long while after they stopped making things or in between production pauses or hiatuses.
Okay. It looks like 88 to 1990 is what IMDb lists for the show. Although, I mean, obviously there are various versions of it that continue on after that, but.
Yeah, well, it is also interesting that they chose to go the route of having them be like little kids who grew up in the 80s as opposed to cartoon characters Chip and Dale from their original inception who were then put into Rescue Rangers. Mm. You know, that was also another choice they were making.
Well, what year were Sandberg and Mulaney born, I wonder, as I'm clicking. Sandberg, 78. Mulaney, I think, what, is he the same age or slightly older? Thank you, IMDb, for the auto-playing video of Akiva Schaffer. That was terrifying. 82. Look at that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that. You and Mulaney. I mean, he's a couple months older than you, but...
Yeah. And we're just as successful.
I mean, at least you can say you have fewer public scandals.
Yes, that is true. I need to work on my public interventions and my leaving my wife to go have an affair with someone who used to be on Attack of the Show.
I used to watch that show.
Yeah, and then have babies.
I mean, I think we could do some of that right now. Like, you could announce on the show that you're leaving your wife. Just quick and easy, done, boom.
Yeah. So,
this is the first time this podcast will be breaking Colin Joe Steele leaves wife.
Yes, I didn't want to have to do it on this podcast.
This is a safe place though for you to announce things that are important to you.
Yeah. My wife and I, of many years,
have mutually decided to part ways.
Yeah.
Please respect our, what do they say? Respect our privacy during this difficult time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you cite co-parenting. Irreconcilable differences in the paperwork you file.
Yeah. This says not like the podcast.
Mm-hmm. And then didn't you say conscious uncoupling, I think, is part of what you say.
Is that a phrase? I don't know that phrase.
Oh, Dan. That's what... Gwyneth Paltrow said when she and Coldplay guy ended their marriage relationship. I don't know. I think it was a marriage.
Yeah. The top results, well, there's Wikipedia and then there's Goop as the second result.
Yeah, well, do you know where Goop is from?
Yeah, Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that much.
Yeah.
Well, she's on those Uber Eats commercials eating soap or whatever.
Yeah.
Paper towels.
Everybody loves unproblematic, easy to get along with Gwyneth Paltrow.
You know, it seems unlikely that she's as strange as she is. She seems, I don't mean this to be in an unkind way, but she seems so much more boring.
Probably. Have you watched her Architectural Digest tour of her home?
No, I don't. Do I want to do that? I don't think I want to do that.
I think it's good to watch just because it will disabuse you of your notion that she is, I don't know, self-aware or anything. Like she walks like the whole camera crew into a room in her home that is a spa, like just full blown tile on the walls, you know, pools, everything. Like it is a literal spa inside of her mansion like home. And then she just like talks about it like it's a bathroom. And then she's like, oh, I guess it's a spa. And it's like, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
These people who are like cribsing themselves without really being on cribs are kind of amazing. I have not seen that, but I have seen, I don't remember where online, either Twitter, or TikTok or something, the whichever of the Kardashians' home has the, I think it's Kim, well, former home with Kanye, where they have the kitchen island with the sink that is like 2 centimeters deep. Have you seen that?
No.
The island has a sink on it, but they wanted it to be designery. So instead of a sink, it basically just slopes down about a half an inch. So it looks completely flat. But when you run the sink, there's a little tiny hole for the water to sort of run in that general direction. But basically what it means is like, you can't use that sink because if you did, the water would just go everywhere.
Well,
but you know, of course it's a beautiful thing that, you know, they use all the time because they're completely, by the way, have you seen the other clip of Kendall attempting to cut a cucumber?
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter.
It's everywhere. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. But I also watched, speaking of the Kardashians, I watched the Travis Barker from Blink 182.
I know who he is.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't sure, you young whippersnappers, if you know.
I know all the Blink 182s. You got the tall one, you've got the tattooed Blink 182, and then you got the skinny one.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, the tattooed one is skinny, too.
Yeah, well, you know, that's not his defining characteristic.
Which one has the, like, hair that kind of, like, poofs? Or used to poof? I don't even know if it still does.
Well, one of the fellas with the poofed hair got cancer and chemo, so he doesn't have hair anymore.
Oh. Oh, that wasn't very thoughtful.
It was a recent development.
Yeah.
I don't expect you to keep up with your Blink-182 news.
No. But anyway, Architectural Digest did another one of their videos where they went inside of Travis Barker's home, and he kept talking about, it's not Chloe. What's the other one? The other older one who's not, so not a kid with the makeup or the Pepsi. But and not Kim.
Are you talking about one of the second generations?
No, like
you got your Kim, your Chloe, your why can't I think of the other one?
I know that's it, but it's the other one.
It's the other one. Yeah, it's the one that he's in a relationship with.
Yes, yes. Well, that's why I mentioned that. Because
my wife would be screaming at me right now. She still watches that show.
They had a very unsubtle
Courtney,
yes. They had a very unsubtle thing where he kept talking about how much he loves Courtney and how brought Courtney into their life. And then he walks into his kitchen to do the tour in the kitchen. And she is sitting on the kitchen island in nothing but a really long shirt, like button-up shirt, just like legs hanging out, just having cereal as if there was no camera crew coming. And she's like, oh, hey. And, you know, goes to kiss him and stuff like that. And it's just like, what? Why are we doing the pretense that you didn't know a camera crew was showing up to your house to do the Architectural Digest shoot?
Just so cool she doesn't care. Just give me her cereal no matter what.
It's just so contrived. Everything they do is contrived.
I mean, perhaps if you lived with cameras wandering around your home for the past 15 or 20 years that you wouldn't really notice it as much as other people would, but...
They become invisible.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because they have to wear invisibility cloaks, too.
Yeah. Well, Travis Barker was wearing pleather, like a pleather onesie utility suit thing. It was very strange.
I wouldn't have thought that this is the stage of his life where he finally got into pleather, but I guess maybe he's having his midlife crisis now.
Yeah, I mean...
You would think the crises were indicative of the tattoos, but no, that was, you know, just for the bands.
Yeah, he's really into minimalism and skulls, which are not minimal, but he likes the two of them together.
Was that minimalism and skulls or minimalism in skulls?
And skulls. Okay. Because the skulls still look like very detailed skulls. It's not like a simplified, abstract, essential, like Johnny Ive version of a skull, just like an actual skull. But it was just...
The essence of a skull.
It's very strange. You know, maybe for the sequel for Rescue Rangers, they can delve into reality television. Maybe with Ugly Sonic, we can do some more with his FBI television show.
There wasn't even a attractive Sonic like wandering by it and him being sad and embarrassed by the popularity of regular Sonic.
No, but they might do that in the, if they do a sequel to this.
They're keeping their powder dry on attractive Sonic.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's enough to have ugly Sonic. You can just like keep plowing through with that for the time being. Because no one was expecting Ugly Sonic.
No one's ever expecting Ugly Sonic.
Yeah.
I mean, for as reference dense as this movie was, it's not to say they couldn't do another, you know, dozen of these movies that are equally as reference dense.
Yeah. No, I think there's no shortage of stuff that they could go through. Because they also have jokes that are not about animation that are about just entertainment as well, like Batman versus E.T., why is that a thing that exists?
Maybe next time we'll get to see Mr. Doubtfire.
With Meryl Streep. That was quite the thing. But they have a lot of these like throwaway little like billboard jokes about Hollywood and reboots and you know, franchises and stuff. So it was interesting to have them do that. Also, you know, there is a Batman connection in that Larry Fong was a cinematographer for this, and he was the cinematographer for Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice, as well as Watchmen and 300 and Super 8.
How did they get him?
Movie. Well, I don't know. He doesn't actually seem to do that many movies, I guess.
Yeah, I was also going to mention that this is, I don't know, not unprecedented for us, but maybe minimal precedent for the fact that we just did two 2022 movies in a row. And it is, in fact, 2022 right now.
You mean instead of us like being like, hey, kids, remember 2022, that we did it in the year of 2022?
Yeah, we watched two movies that came out this year in a row, as opposed to just pulling out some, you know, Netflix gem from 1987 that nobody's ever heard of.
Well, kids, listeners, the magical... reason why this sort of thing can happen is because these are available for streaming. So,
and about an hour and a half long.
Well, not the Batman.
Oh, sure. No.
Yeah, the Batman was a multiple sitting kind of a movie. You know, Chip and Dale was selected because it was short and it's recent. Even though it is an hour and a half long, somebody can still fall asleep in it.
I wanted to watch the movie. I just had a. I didn't have a long day. I had a very easy day, basically. But, you know, I ate a lot of red beans and rice and then watched a movie. And, you know, I was tired. I don't know what to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Happens.
Well, I mean, usually, you know, people say you're full of beans. But I guess sometimes when you're full of beans, you're tired.
Rice and beans. I don't know why I'm looking at Billy Crystal right now. We didn't get any like 80s Billy Crystal references in this movie. Could have.
I mean, we could have gotten a lot of other references. We got Pogs. Were you expecting Pogs?
I was not expecting Pogs. I forget Pogs exist until somebody makes a Pogs reference, and then I go, oh yeah, Pogs. I have Pogs. I don't think I still have them. I think I think I got rid of them, you know, 20 years ago or something. As soon as I looked at them with any bit of disdain of like, ugh, can't believe I used to do that, I think they were immediately gone. Mm. But nowadays, I would like to see some of my Pogs.
Do you still have Magic the Gathering cards?
I never had Magic the Gathering cards.
Whoa.
Not a single Magic the Gathering card. This is also, I missed Magic the Gathering. I missed the Pokemons and the Yu-Gi-Ohs and the things.
Did you have Warhammer figurines that you painted by hand?
I did not. I had Legos, and I had a few.
Oh, Dan, like, Dan, Dan, Dan.
What?
It's Lego.
It was blocks and whatever, bricks or whatever.
It's not plural.
I had some Lego, and I had some of those model-like cars that you would glue together with that glue that would destroy your brain cells.
Well, they use the same glue for the Warhammer things. And it didn't just destroy your brain cells. It also, like, destroyed your fingerprints.
Did you become a seven serial killer?
I could have. I missed my window, I suppose. I could always get back into Warhammer. Yeah, the problem...
That glue's probably illegal these days, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the chemicals that they use to make that would probably count as carcinogenic. But the glue was, because I'm sure it's the same glue that you use on your model, but it doesn't set immediately. So what you would do is you would take this other stuff that sets the glue, and you'd put that onto it, and then it would set it rock hard. But at the same time, if you had glue and that stuff on your fingers, it would just get stuck to your fingers, and then it would just, like, your whole, like, the skin on your fingers, fingertips would peel off. It'd just be awful. There's just no way to get rid of it.
Is this the stuff? Test doors? Yeah, this looks like it. Little, like, tin, kind of, like, red tube that you squeeze. Cement for plastic. Yeah, look at this.
Oh, no,
it has it has a circle with a skull and crossbones next to a circle with a campfire next to it.
Oh, well, I mean, it's not a campfire. It's saying it's flammable. It's not flammable, saying, please take me camping.
Flammable, vapor, harmful. It always said, you know, use in well-ventilated area. Nobody ever did.
No. If we had well-ventilated areas, we wouldn't be playing with little model figurines. That's just how that goes.
I had a Firebird. I had a Smokey and the Bandit car that, if you, like, pulled this little tab on the back of it, it would light up the headlights.
Oh.
I didn't make most of that one. I think my dad made most of it. Then I, like, you know, put the decals on or something.
I don't have any of my Warhammer figurines anymore.
Well, they all go to the Goodwill?
No, I mean, they went to
I put a firecracker in your stuff and blow them up kind of kid?
No. But I gave them to my other sibling, who was still into Warhammer at the time, and then they disappeared or were unaccounted for or went into a trench. I have no idea. But anything I ever give to that one sibling just disappears for forever, and we don't know why.
You know what you should do? Mm-hmm. You should hire Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers to figure out what happened.
Yeah, because when you need help, just call. There's no case too big, no case too small.
Did you enjoy the Post Malone remix at the end?
No, I hated it. I don't like Post Malone at all.
Malone's good and fun and extremely stupid and doesn't take himself very seriously.
No, I mean, I like that. I liked the setup for the joke of it being Post Malone, where they explicitly say that they are going to have, you know, some version of the theme song that has that's very serious with a pop star, instead of just doing the theme song that everybody wants. And then they go right into the Post Malone version. So, you know, it exists.
You didn't appreciate the song he did for Spider-Verse?
I didn't love it, no. And there's also, what was it? His Doritos commercial. Was it Doritos? I think so. He had some sort of snack chip thing commercial.
Yeah, he did some Doritos commercials. He also did a cover of a Hootie and the Blowfish song for Pokemon 25th anniversary.
Well, good for him.
It's a good cover.
Are you saying it's a good cover because you like his music?
I enjoy some of his songs as well as Hootie the Blowfish. So it's a Venn diagram that works for me.
You like Hootie and the Blowfish, and you like Post Malone, and you really love Post Malone doing a cover of a Hootie and the Blowfish song.
I wouldn't say that it is greater than the sum of its parts.
Defend your position, Dan.
I It's not 1 + 1 = 2. It's like 1 + 1 =, you know, like 0.8, basically. Wow. But it's fine. It's up there. It's fine. It's tolerable.
1 + 1 + 2 + 1, not 1 + 2 + 1 + 1.
But, exactly.
You know, that's a whole nother conversation that we can have post Malone.
We didn't get any Clue references. There was a Monopoly reference in here. So we've got, you know, the who owns Monopoly? Is that like Parker Brothers or something?
Yes. But I think they also...
That version of intellectual property?
I mean, God bless whatever lawyers had to do the clearance for this movie, because I can't imagine how much paperwork had to be filed and the back and forth with all of these other entities in order to license these things. Because we even have like He-Man and Skeletor in here from the 1980s incarnation of them.
Although, to be fair, the people who own He-Man and Skeletor seem extremely willing to loan out the intellectual property for He-Man and Skeletor. But yeah, it wasn't the whole thing about Roger Rabbit. They said like they could never make a movie like this again because like it would be too expensive or painful to get all of that intellectual property in a single movie. And while that may be the case for that particular batch of intellectual property, this one's swinging for the fences as well.
Yeah, I mean, well, they had there was a Looney Tunes frozen meal inside of Chip's freezer, but it was also a chipmunk-sized version of a Looney Tunes frozen meal.
You gotta get over this scale thing. In their world, cartoons exist with humans, so all of the products for humans exist also in chipmunk size.
Remember having an iPhone with that has marimba on it that is chipmunk-sized? What do you think the battery life is on that?
Not great, no. I wouldn't think. But, you know, chipmunks are, you know, they have limited lifespans compared to humans, so probably all feels relative to them.
I mean, they're pretty long-lived because they're, you know, they were in, was it middle school in 1982?
Yeah. Well, Chip and Dale are probably, you know, they've got all those good Hollywood drugs that keep you old till keep you alive till you're extremely old. And, you know, we know Dale's had some work done and Chip's not really saying anything.
Yeah. Well, we need to talk about this. We need to talk about the work that he had done. I know
the
that
CGI
we...
surgery.
Yeah, we don't talk about looks on this podcast a lot. We don't objectify people, but...
I'm not here to judge.
No.
Unless you're a fictional character, in which case we can.
Yeah, because Dale got the CGI surgery, which they refer to, and he looks like Alvin and the Chipmunks, or Garfield, or, you know, the other things, where they take a cartoon and they make it... make a 3D version of it for live action. Unfortunately, what they did with Chip is that they cel shaded Chip, and the same for Peter Pan, for Sweet Pete. And I think that was the wrong choice for both of those, because I think whenever they had the hand drawn stuff in here, it looked more alive than Chip or Sweet Pete looked, because you could see their sort of 3D head rotate kind of stuff going on with the cell shading.
Oh, so you're saying rather than hand draw Chip, they 3D modeled him and used the shader to make him look 2D.
Yeah. I mean, that's not new technology, but it doesn't work well when you're trying to contrast him with the CGI version of Dale, you know,
right,
where you're saying like, oh, this is the 3D version. This is the live action, quote unquote, version. And then this is the wholesome original hand drawn thing. And it's not hand drawn. It's cel shaded. So it rings a little hollow and it lacks something. It lacks some of the dynamism. But the movie does have hand-drawn characters in here, like the DJ Cat? What is the one from the Paula Abdul thing? Paula Abdul is here.
Yeah. I wanted to say like cool cat or some dumb crap. It's like the dumbest possible cat pun thing ever, but yeah.
Yeah, and then you also had like the Three Little Pigs, and you had Roger Rabbit, and all these other characters, even young Peter Pan, or not young, but down on his luck teenager Peter Pan. That was hand-drawn, and so that when you would cut back and forth between that and the cel-shaded versions of those, it just was a little different in a way that I didn't feel like it really drove home the point that they're, you know, like different characters. Although I understand the production reasons why they do it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder if there are actual, like, practical reasons why they would have done it, because I was looking through the IMDb photos here, and I parked on one where when Chip pops out in his disguise, where he's wearing his Indiana Jones outfit, and it's a cel-shaded Chip, but he's got a fully lit and rendered and shaded, 3D hat and jacket on him, which mm-hmm. would be pretty complicated to do over top of a hand-drawn version, I would think. But there's probably reasons for the interaction and, you know, the animation that they did some of that stuff.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it mostly has to do with the interaction stuff, because you were also having Dale interact with Chip for most of the film. So to have the two of them together and touching the same stuff or working off against one another, like it would be more difficult to do it where you had the, like, a animator do the 3D version of it and then hand it off to somebody to do the hand-drawn version of it, or blocked in both of them hand-drawn and then replaced to the hand-drawn one with the, you know, CG version of it. Like either one of those solutions would be cost prohibitive, at the very least. But in terms of what you just mentioned about the clothing stuff, there are several things that these characters touch or manipulate that is photoreal. And then there are other things that the characters touch or manipulate or wear, more importantly, that are cel shaded. Chip has a white button up shirt on through most of the film. And that white button-up shirt is cel-shaded. But the like Indiana Jones thing that he puts on is photoreal. The zip tie that goes on him is photoreal. All of these other things don't have the same sort of same sort of shading to interact with them. But you know, it is a choice that they made, and obviously, at least according to Akiva Schaffer, they had like an eighth the budget of a like animated movie to do this, even though there are animated characters in here. So they had $70 million to do all the animation in here and shoot the live action and put it all together. So it's not that I'm saying they cheaped out. It's just that they didn't have, I would assume, the resources that they would need to really do more hand-drawn stuff than what they did.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the choice was probably made early on because it was, I don't know, it's not really a joke, but it's like it speaks to the relationship between the two characters, but also it's not really relevant. Like they could have gone without having one have CG surgery and one be cel shaded. Like they didn't really need that for any particular plot purposes, as far as I can recall.
I think they did, because it was a way of showing that Dale was sort of chasing relevance and fame in a way that Chip was not. You know, just in the same way that a real actor who is, you know, not as popular anymore would get some work done in order to look more youthful or attractive or something to land more roles.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good joke. It's a useful joke, but I don't know. It seems like a lot for the entire runtime of the film to maintain just for that joke.
Yeah, well, at some point I was like, I wonder if they're gonna like have him go, oh, you know what? I don't need to, you know, look like this. I can just be myself or something. But it's like, but then what kind of message is that
CG reversion surgery?
Yeah, and then it was just like, what kind of message is that sending? Because that just seems a little weird. But then you had the whole thing with the Snoopy ear from the machine, and they just sort of get zapped off, and then he can just blow his finger and then he gets another ear. So who knows what the actual like medical ramifications are for the CGI surgery that that Dale got.
It's like when a lizard loses a tail and you're like, oh, don't worry about it. It just grows back, which is probably not true, but that's what people say.
Yeah. And, you know, it seemed like they were able to fix Monty at the end, at least. He had bandages on his ear. Remember when he was a...
his mustache back?
What was it? Stupido, the flying elephant? Was his bootleg thing that he was supposed to be? Yeah.
Stupido.
Yeah. Is that a Dumbo?
Yeah, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
It's Stupido.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I kind of forgot about Monterey Jack's like crazy eyes cheese addiction thing, like mm-hmm. when he goes all swirly eyes and stuff. When they started playing the opening animation in the beginning when he was talking about like the show, like in their backstory, I was like, oh yeah, all these other characters and all this other stuff. I forgot about some of these things. It's still funny that his character name is Monterey Jack. That joke yeah. holds up still.
Well, I mean, especially what they call it out with the Bjornsson, the cheese guy, where he says, we're looking for a friend, Monterey Jack. And he says, that is the name of a cheese. Go on. And it's just, I don't know what you do with those characters. Because obviously they wanted to have this sort of like buddy cop energy of Chip and Dale. And then everything else is kind of like ancillary. So... you know, there's not much to do with Monterey Jack, I suppose. Maybe they'll find more to do with Monterey Jack and, you know, Gadget and Zipper in the sequel, I guess, if they ever make one. But it was interesting that they cast Eric Bana to be the voice of Monterey Jack. Because, I mean, he's Australian, but he went so fully into the, like, cartoonish, over-the-top... fake Australian accent that was done for the original like Monterey Jack, voiced by Peter Cullen and Jim Cummings, I think, alternatively.
Are they still alive? Did they just get pushed out?
I think Peter Cullen is no longer with us, but Jim Cummings is still alive and he voices several other stuff in here. Let's see, Peter Cullen. No, he's still alive. Peter Cullen's still alive.
Hmm. They just wanted extra star power. Jim Cummings is from priming. Youngstown, Ohio. Oof.
Mm.
Sorry, buddy.
Yeah. But like Jim Cummings is pretty famous and prolific in terms of voice acting because remember when they had a Darkwing Duck at the end of the movie?
Mm-hmm.
That was him.
Oh, he also did some characters in, I don't know if you call this the live action Winnie the Pooh movie.
Mm-hmm.
Ewan McGregor.
Yeah. Well, he also does... what is it? What was it called? Pooge or something? The honey bear, fat honey bear, bootleg in here, yeah. And the bootleg ticker. I think he has some other voices in here. And Tress MacNeille has a few voices that she does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing about voice actors. They can do multiple characters in the same movie. It's wild.
Yeah.
Think they get double the payday?
No, they get paid so little. you know, it's good for them to continue working. I mean, Tress MacNeille makes it in volume because she does like 90% of the female voices that you hear in any sort of animated thing. I think like her and Tara Strong are basically all of the women that you ever hear in an animated picture. But they always will have like the title characters in something feature length specifically with star power like John Mulaney and Andy Samberg and Will Arnett apparently as Sweet Pete, which is good casting.
It's still funny every time you say Sweet Pete. It's pretty good. I did like that Tim Robinson was Ugly Sonic, even if he was like sort of unrecognizable. It's just perfect that it's Tim Robinson.
Yeah, well, I mean, he had Tim Robinson energy, even if he wasn't Tim Robinson there. And Seth Rogen is very recognizable as Seth Rogen, and they modeled...
Well, they let him full-on do the laugh.
Yeah, well, and they modeled the head of the guy on Seth Rogen.
And they wanted it to be recognizable. I would say, yeah, the teeth. They modeled the teeth after Seth Rogen as well.
Mm-hmm.
Is he more recognizable for the teeth or the laugh, you think?
Laugh. I mean, his his voice is very recognizable. So, you know, there's that. But they chose to specifically make him look like Seth Rogen. So that was another thing they could do. I don't know why Flula Borg was in here as a snake DJ, but he's here.
You know, they wanted somebody with an accent and didn't want somebody to fake an accent, so.
Yeah. And then
he pops up in strange places. Didn't we just see him in something not too long ago?
He was in the Suicide Squad.
Mm.
Wait, the Suicide Squad?
The Suicide Squad?
Yeah. The one that What's-His-Face did. Guardians guy yeah. did.
Yeah, we watched that movie, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
He was also on an episode of Tacoma FD, apparently.
Yeah. And then, for some reason, Dennis Haysbert, the voice of Allstate Insurance, is Zipper the Housefly.
Yeah, I'm not sure I quite understood that, other than the fact that it's just so implausible that he's the voice of this little tiny fly, but it's, you know, he's there.
Yeah.
Did Zipper ever speak in the show, or he just made buzzy sounds?
He just made buzzy sounds. I mean, that was the whole thing, is that he was just, he couldn't talk. Andy Samberg, in his opening spiel of exposition, mentions that Zipper's thing was that he was really small and that he couldn't talk, so he was a double threat. And that was the sort of throwaway joke for that moment. But Dennis Haysbert, apparently, it was the Zipper in real life who could talk. But Corey Burton, another prolific voice actor, did the unintelligible fly noises and came back to do it for the film for the, like 2 seconds that it's in there. Incredible. And when they do the like sped up chipmunk voice for Dale, that's Corey Burton doing the voice for the sped up chipmunk stuff for that like 2 seconds that it's in there for. So I don't know. Hopefully they paid Corey Burton enough to show up and do such like trivial stuff.
Yeah. J.K. Simmons, Captain Putty. You know, he just has to be a police captain and everything, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, talk about a recognizable voice. It's J.K. Simmons. Did you want it's the battle of the insurance companies. We just needed to have Zipper and Captain Putty square off against each other. That would have been good.
But like a very dramatic, like go super widescreen, like anime style for a little while.
Yeah. And then Jake from State Farm needed to get in there.
Jake from State Farm, you know, he's bordering on overexposed right now. He's everywhere.
Mm, too much Jake?
There's a lot of Jake is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mostly it's because the he's in commercials with basketball players, and it's the NBA playoffs right now. So,
oh, see, I don't watch the NBA playoffs, so I have a normal amount of exposure to Jake from State Farm.
You're not a fan of basketball or commercials?
I mean, not like you, Dan, to yeah. either of those things.
I had the weird experience the other day where a commercial was on, and I went, that lady looks familiar, but I don't know why. And then I just sort of sat there and stared at the wall for a while until I realized she was in one of our videos. That's the first time that's happened. Usually it's like, oh, yeah, you're from that other thing. But no, it's like, oh, no, you're from that thing from 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Weird.
I mean, I think we've exhausted everything we can say about the film.
Yeah, it's another one of those ones that it's like, it's fun. It's a movie. It was expensive, clearly. So if they are going to do another one of these, it's going to be a while, and justifying the cost of it is probably going to be pretty difficult. It's like you took a TV show and made it like slightly more modern and relevant, and then made it cost a whole bunch of money. So the odds of being able to repeat that are relatively small. But
I mean, it seems to be pretty popular. But I don't know.
This week, at least.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's one of those things where it's hard to gauge exactly because it was released in theaters and on Disney Plus. So it's like, well, so where does that go in terms of what people feel about it? But
people signing up for Disney Plus just because of this? You want to get your streaming punditry in here?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think anybody's signing up just for this. And in terms of people who would be like, oh, wow, The Rescue Rangers, I want to watch that movie. So Jason, he loved Rescue Rangers, the cartoon.
Okay.
The original cartoon. And he thought for some reason that they would do a sincere version of Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers as a movie. And I was like, no, that's not happening. And I showed him the trailer and he's like, what the hell is this? And I was like, well, it was just sort of like riffing on things and, you know, throwing in the jokes and stuff and, you know, like Detective Pikachu or, you know, Sonic. And he's like, no, I want a Rescue Rangers movie. Why don't they just do that? Like, why don't they just do that? Why is it like this? It's like, well, I don't know. And then we sat there and we watched.
It's 2022 and we can't make a movie that's not self-referential, that's based on previous IP. I don't know.
Yeah. Also, other than him, what is it, like five other people that would watch the movie? I don't know. I don't know how you do a sincere take on Rescue Rangers, the cartoon show. Because I don't know if you've gone back and tried to watch one of those episodes recently.
No.
But they are dreadful.
Well, it would be like the new Home Alone movie. It's where it's like it's Home Alone 6, but it's just the same thing with a slightly different flavor. Like, yeah, people aren't going to tune in for that. But like, I can't even name another property other than Home Alone of somebody that's tried to do like a sequel or a reboot earnestly like that instead of jokey.
Yeah,
I'm sure there is something, but I can't think of it.
But also at the same time, it's like, it's Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. It was recycling a bunch of garbage with some very loosely defined like world building and rules of stuff in order to make it work.
They were dressed like Indiana Jones and Magnum PI, for God's sake.
I know. I mean, it doesn't, it's not like it was some like very serious heartfelt thing. It was it is what it was. It was a like a cash grab that like had some yuck-em-ups in it.
I guess it was kind of cartoon MacGyver sort of, with a little bit of more investigative stuff.
It was mainly puns. I'm assuming that the writing staff was entirely 30-year-old men. and like that kind of, you know, went on with Tailspin and Darkwing Duck and stuff.
Tailspin. He had that cool little thing that flipped out that he air surfed on. I don't know what that was supposed to be, but it was so cool.
Yeah. I mean, the whole world of it made no sense. And why they would recycle Baloo from the Jungle Book to be in Tailspin, like, what was, huh? Like Disney of the late 80s and early 90s doing stuff for TV was just very, it was fascinating because you'd just see things recycled in such a way that made you question a lot of stuff about taste that people had. Because you had DuckTales and Scrooge McDuck and stuff, but then that spawned Darkwing Duck because Launchpad McQuack came from that to be in Darkwing Duck.
Launchpad McQuack was certainly one of the, like, they wrote him to be one of the dumbest characters ever written.
Yeah. And then they rebooted DuckTales a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And they brought it back. And then in...
I'm on DuckTales, Larry.
And then in the DuckTales... reference acknowledged, by the way. In the DuckTales reboot, they had Darkwing Duck be an in-universe show that had ended, and they were trying to bring back as a movie, and they were trying to do it as like a Christopher Nolan thing inside of the cartoon show reboot of DuckTales.
Oh, so Darkwing Duck was like Tim Burton's Batman, and they're trying to do a Christopher Nolan Darkwing Duck?
Basically. And things go off of the rails. But it was just a... It's just interesting to watch the ways that this sort of intellectual property is manipulated. I wouldn't say deftly, but it is definitely had a lot of people, you know, moving stuff around over the years.
Well, everyone's looking for the Marvel Cinematic Universe version of everything now. They're like, oh, look at all these references. I'm sure they've got some 20-year-long plan about how to tie all of these things together in a way that we can't foresee, but they're geniuses calling the shots behind the curtain. So by the time we get to Chip and Dale's colon Endgame or whatever.
Chip and Dale's colon.
You know, when we get to Endgame, we're really going to get to, like, you know, we're gonna see Monterey Jack come out. We're going to see Roger Rabbit really come out.
For Chip and Dale's colon, do you think they need to CGI? Get it? GI, yeah. Gastrointestinal.
I get it.
It's C-S-E-E, but also the letter C.
The worst poop joke I've ever heard.
And on that upbeat note, I think we can probably close it out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We didn't answer this in the podcast, but do you identify with Dale or with Chip?
In general?
Yeah.
Like this incarnation, or are we talking all incarnations?
Let's just say this one, because I think it would get a little murky trying to include every possible incarnation.
Let's see. Probably Chip, because I think I lack extroverted ambition, and I definitely hold internal grudges, but not in a way that I'm gonna like use later, but just in a way that's going to eat away at me inside.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I think I'm Chip.
Also, the heavy metal.
The heavy metal, yeah, just very casually listening to just some of the loudest metal.
Yeah, I mean, I also think I'm Chip too, which complicates things because you can't. It's not called Chip and Chip, but
well, it could be Chips.
Chips. This is what we needed. It was an Eric Estrada cameo in this.
It's shocking we didn't get one.
Yeah, Dale could have shouted out Chip, and then Eric Estrada could have just stuck his hand up from the fan con or whatever and been like, "Someone calling for me." Then that would have been great. I think that would have fit in perfectly. Fresh Prince, nonsense. Watson and Mr. Holmes.